If you're joining us for the first time, or you haven't been here in a while, we have been considering a theme called Inside Out, based on the Pixar Disney film that came out last year. Wonderful animated film. I have gained a great appreciation in watching this film, not only because it's entertaining, it's a pretty entertaining film, but also because of the science and the thought that went into the making of this film. This film is about emotions, it's about feelings, and it's about emotional health. And we, as those who have been created by God, in our effort, in our lifetime to understand sort of our physical or even our intellectual, we would be remiss if we didn't give some attention to our emotional parts, our emotional side. You know, it's not enough to just know our IQ. We need to know our EQ. And so our probing of some spiritual themes and this film is an effort to highlight themes regarding our emotional health. Again, this is a story, a cartoon. The main character, a girl by the name of Riley, a young girl and her family, mother and father, moving from Minnesota to San Francisco. And we're afforded a trip inside of her head to see the feelings that come up as she goes through this move. Parents, I think this is an invitation for us to look inside again what our children may be going through when we do things like that, when we make a move or when decisions are made. Now, again, this cartoon is based on science, but it's not necessarily a exact picture of your child. But it also gives us a window just into our emotions in general, the fact that in our minds and in our hearts, we have the comprising of various different emotions, and they all play a part. They're all there for a reason. Last week we looked at joy. Joy is the sort of the main character. She kind of is in control of the mind, and what joy wants is to protect core memories, and she wants to protect the personality of Riley, and so she feverishly works throughout the film trying to control things and make sure that everything is okay. And we talked about this feeling of joy, euphoria that we feel when things happen to us, and that's good, but we caution that when other emotions come into the picture, it may not be a right thing for joy to squeeze out all those other emotions, but that there is room and value for those other emotions. We shared last week that the tension in this film is one of joy's quest in the understanding of the validity of the other emotions in the mind. Does the presence of sadness, anger, disgust, fear threaten joy? That's what we're probing. Now, this is the crux of the film, Inside Out, as I shared last week, because Joy is in search of an understanding in which she has to come to grips that the other emotions are not only present, but they are needed and valuable for emotional health. We're going to talk about sadness this morning. And I consider myself an expert on sadness. You see, I grew up in Buffalo, and snowed a lot, and I'm a Buffalo Bills fan. Okay, and if you know anything about the Buffalo Bills, we gained our fame not because we won Super Bowls, but we gained our fame because we attended a lot of Super Bowls, and we lost said Super Bowls four in a row. I can remember Super Bowl 25, sitting in the living room watching the last play, Buffalo Bills versus the New York Giants. Scott Norwood is lined up on the 42-yard line to kick or kick a 49-yard field goal, and he had just said in the paper, paper 2 days before. He hopes it comes down to a field goal, and he's there, and he kicks it, and it just sailed wide right. And I remember looking over at my mother. She was crying. Y'all laughing at my mama. She cried because we lost. I know a little bit about sadness, but let's not dwell there because, you know, I just finished a round of counseling about that. But what about you? Can you think right now of the moments that make you sad? A tearjerker film. I don't know. There's a ton of them that you watch, and no matter how many times you watch it, there's always that part that gets you. Yeah. I know, men. I'm just talking to the ladies. Wink, wink. All right. Disappointment in others. Is that something that makes you sad? You expect something out of someone, and they disappoint you, and it just makes you sad. Or what about the putting down of a pet? Is that something that makes you sad? Watching those you love move away or leave. My father wasn't one who displayed a lot of emotion, laughter. So he laughed a lot. But other than that, he just didn't show a lot of emotion. Even when he got angry, just didn't display that a lot. After I moved away from Buffalo and started a family, we would go back from time to time and visit. You know, when we lived in Michigan, and just a year when we lived in Ohio, my father died shortly after we moved to Ohio. But I remember when it was time for us to leave, and we would pack up the car, and you know, all my family were around, you know, ready to say goodbye to me, and I'm like, where's my dad? Where's my father? He disappeared, and this happened every time we were going to leave. And so, you know, the first time it happened, of course, I went looking for my dad, and I go in the garage, and we had a detached garage back of the house, and there's my dad in there, and he's like in the corner, and I'm like, hey, dude, we're about to push, we're about to take off, and I'll never forget the whimper in his voice when he said, okay. I said, are you all right? And I'll never forget again that whimpering when he just said, just go. And he turned around, and my father's face was just filled with tears. When I was thinking about this last night, it even caused me to shed a couple tears. I'd never really seen my father cry before, but he was sad. His baby boy, who had grown up and started a family, was leaving. And you know what? I never really understood that moment as much until just recently, when I go back to Buffalo, and there are times when we're leaving, and all my nephews and cousins, you know, we're driving off, and this is after they've begged us to stay another day, or take me with you, please, take us. And we're driving away, and I remember one instance where I was driving away, it's when I was by myself, and all the kids were running down the street as I was driving away, saying, goodbye, Uncle Dion. And I turned that corner, and I wept like a baby. Sad. You know, we experience those moments of sadness. In recent weeks, has anyone seen this picture? This is a picture of a young boy in war-torn Syria, and some workers went into the house where it had been bombed. Five-year-old kid. Covered in dust from the bricks and the mortar and bleeding from a possible head wound. And watching a video of this was even more moving, as you saw this five-year-old boy who seemingly had no clue what was going on. In recent days, we also learned that his 10-year-old brother actually died. If this doesn't make you sad, go get checked out. I'm not trying to be flippant here. There's something about this image that should conjure up at least sadness. For some, it might be anger or disgust or might maybe even fear. But it should conjure up something, or at least for me, it made me sad to realize that this is one of the survivors. But there are other 5-year-olds, 4-year-olds, 3-year-olds, and babies who didn't make it. I've alluded in previous sermons that as creatures created in the image of God, we have been created with feelings that have been placed there by God Himself. Additionally, we see these feelings and emotions in Jesus. I want us to look at John chapter 11 again as we probe this emotion of sadness. John chapter 11, starting at verse number 25, Jesus was told earlier, if you read from verse number 1, Jesus was told that his friend Lazarus was sick. And Lazarus lived in this town of Bethany where Jesus was. It was a two-day trip to get to Bethany where Lazarus lived. And so when Jesus was told that his friend was sick, he told the messenger, he says, I want you to go back to the community and I want you to tell them that this is not going to end in death. And that's kind of important. It's kind of important. When Jesus gets to this place where his friend is, we learn that he's dead. And not only that he's dead, but he had been dead for 4 days. Jesus even waited and delayed his trip to go. He waited 2 days and then he went. And so what we kind of deduce or surmise is that right about the time when the messenger came to tell Jesus that Lazarus was sick, he might have already been dead. Yet Jesus says, this is not going to end in death. That's kind of important. So picking up at verse number 45, Jesus comes to this community where Lazarus is, and people are crying, they're sad, and he meets Lazarus' sister, Martha. Verse number 25 says, Jesus said to her, I am the resurrection and the life. The one who believes in me will live even though they die. And whoever lives by believing in me will never die. Do you believe this? Yes, Lord, she replied. I believe that you are the Messiah, the Son of God, who is to come into the world. After she had said this, she went back and called her sister Mary aside. The teacher is here, she said, and is asking for you. When Mary heard this, she got up quickly and went to him. Now Jesus not yet entered the village, but was still at the place where Martha had met him. When the Jews who had been with Mary in the house comforting her noticed how quickly she got up and went out, they followed her, supposing she was going to the tomb to mourn there. When Mary reached the place where Jesus was and saw him, she fell at his feet and said, Lord, if you had been here, my brother would not have died. When Jesus saw her weeping and the Jews who had come along with her also weeping, he was deeply moved in spirit and troubled. Where have you laid him? He asked. Come and see, Lord, they replied. Jesus wept. Then the Jews said, see how he loved him. But some of them said, could not he who opened the eyes of the blind man have kept this man from dying? Verse number 38, Jesus, once more deeply moved, came to the tomb. It was caved with a stone laid across the entrance. Fascinating story that if I had more time, and we were talking about a different subject, we could unpack so many things. But what grabs our attention in that text, obviously, is verse number 35, a text that, for many of us, that was our first memory verse. It was easy to memorize. Jesus wept. Jesus wept. This verse need not be recognized simply because it's such a short verse. Here, the narrator of this text, after describing this scene, after describing this interaction and this encounter with the sisters of this dead man, Lazarus, Jesus wept. Now, this wasn't a tear that my father shed in the corner of a garage. This wasn't a tear that I shed as I turned the corner when I was leaving Buffalo. This isn't a tear of my mother crying after Scott Norwood missed that field goal. This was loud, uncontrollable, sobbing, crying. I don't want to gross you out here, but we call it in the black community, snots and boogers. That's when everything just comes out and tears and mucus and all that. That's what took place here. Jesus wept in response to him being deeply moved and troubled. And that word troubled doesn't just mean like a little it means kind of Jesus was angry. For some reason, he was angry that he came to this village and was met with all this sadness and this crying. Just an aside, I'm not sure that Jesus died because his friend was dead. I think Jesus was crying because he had told them that this wasn't going to end in death. And seemingly, the people who he loved the most, his good friends, they didn't believe him. In chapter 12, he even talks about being disturbed that people just they don't believe. But whatever the case, Jesus demonstrated sadness, deep sadness, and no matter whether the people there discerned the reason, you know, some said, oh, he loved them. That's what the fact that he cried with them is an important feature of this text. And it's important for us to understand that sometimes we need to meet mourning or sadness with mourning and sadness. If ever the feelings of sadness was validated, it would be in this text in the fourth gospel. Jesus was a deeply compassionate human, fully divine, fully human. And when it comes to sadness in our society or in our circumstance, for some reason we tend to try to push sadness away or bury sadness. It's kind of like in the film. I think I showed a clip last week where Joy in the film, you know, it's the first day of school and she's all happy. Yay, it's the first day of school. And she gives fear a job. She gives anger a job. She gives disgust a job. And then she says, okay, sadness, I need you to, this little circle here, I just need you to just stand in the circle and don't move. Oh, if that does not demonstrate or display kind of what we do with sadness. We don't like to be sad. It's wired into us. I mean, we don't like our babies to cry or be sad or uncomfortable, right? Don't cry. Or even when our kids now, when they cry over something for probably legitimate reasons, as parents, we're wired to ask this question: why are you crying? Well, stop crying. I just did that yesterday. Like, why are you, or the day before, why are you crying? One of the ways that we, or one of the places that we need to move towards is that when people cry, they're crying for a reason. And who am I to tell someone they don't have a right to feel the way that they feel? We need to validate their sadness. Society sometimes insists that sadness stay in the circle as Joy did. How many men here have never seen their fathers cry? It's a lot of us, or if we have seen them, very few, because it's not macho to cry. It's not manlike to Christ. So says society. I'm here to tell you that Jesus was probably more man than any of us here. And he wept. He wept. Several years ago, a friend of mine experienced one of the greatest sources of pain and sadness. And that's what sadness is. Really, sadness is a response to some deep pain or horror or trauma. But several years ago, a friend of mine experienced some deep pain, deep horror. His wife had been working out on a treadmill, and she stepped off the treadmill, said she didn't feel well, and she passed out, and she passed away right there next to the treadmill. He was at the hospital where he was receiving friends, and his best friend came in, and for some reason, when he saw his best friend, he lost it, and he just fell into the arms of his best friend, just weeping. I would imagine similar to what we see here in the text of John, as Jesus is weeping. He falls in his best friend's arms, and he just starts weeping. And his best friend says, "Dude, cut that out. You need to get up. You need to stand up, and you need to be a man." And that's what he did. He wiped away his tears, and he stood up, and he stopped crying. Oh, man. I'm going to just warn you all, if something horrific like that happens to me, and you come into the visitor's room, and you see me crying uncontrollably, please don't tell me that. It's not what I need to hear at that moment. It would be probably better for you to cry with me. Might have been better for the friends in that room to cry with that friend. I realize that it's not, you know, anyone's intention to be hurtful or painful when they don't validate sadness. They have the best intentions. I get that. But we need to learn how to live in these moments and not think that we have to just rush in and fix them and take them away. The best way to deal with sadness sometimes is to be sad with them in that moment. This is why we think that when people are sad, the best thing to do is to cheer them up. We do that with our babies and our kids. We don't want them to experience pain, as I shared earlier. I want you to pay attention to a clip from the film that I think demonstrates in a very vivid way how to be present with someone when they're sad. And if you've not watched the film, just a quick setup. Bing Bong is one of the characters. He's an imaginary friend that Riley had made up when she was little, and he's in the brain, and he experienced the loss of one of his possessions, and he's really sad about that. So I want you to pay attention to how both joy and sadness try to serve Bing Bong during this moment.
My rocket! Wait, Riley and I were still using that rocket. It still has some song power left. Who's your friend who likes to play?
Riley can't be done with me.
Hey, it's gonna be okay. We can fix this. We just need to get back to headquarters. Which way to the train station?
I had a whole trip planned for us.
Hey, who's ticklish, huh? Here comes the tickle monster.
Hey, Bing Bong, look at this. Oh, here's a fun game. You point to the train station and we all go there. Won't that be fun? Come on, let's go to the train station.
I'm sorry they took your rocket. They took something that you loved. It's gone. forever.
Sadness. Don't make him feel worse.
Sorry.
It's all I had left of Riley.
I bet you and Riley had great adventures.
Oh, they were wonderful. Once we flew back in time, we had breakfast twice that day.
Sadness!
It sounds amazing. I bet Riley liked it.
Oh, she did. We were best friends.
Yeah, it's sad.
I'm okay now. Come on. The train station is this way.
How did you do that?
I don't know. He was sad, so I listened to what...
Hey! There's the train!
What Bing Bong needed was presence and affirmation of his pain. I'm not saying that there aren't moments where there's a fix that involves cheering someone up or you know, being a healthy distraction. But sometimes someone who is sad just needs someone to be sad next to them. And it's okay. I think that's what we see in Jesus. Jesus is one who recognizes the moment and intends to be present in that moment. The Hebrew writer puts it this way. So then, since we have a great high priest who has entered heaven, Jesus, the Son of God, let us hold firmly to what we believe. This high priest of ours understands our weaknesses, for he faced all of the same testings we do. Yet he did not sin. That's from Hebrews, from the New Living Translation. God in flesh, Jesus, he demonstrates his love and care for us in the way he leans into our circumstance as one who feels himself. He's not a callous figure who casts a vision for a new way of living absent of our emotions and feelings. He knows our feelings because he experienced our feelings. Jesus, he experienced disappointment. Jesus, he experienced rejection. Jesus, he experienced pain and horror and losing things. And so when it comes to our feelings of disappointment or feelings of pain or horror, Jesus understands. He's a high priest that feels, he empathizes with us. And there are moments where words don't necessarily heal. Sometimes just knowing he is present or that he has sent others to be present with us is what leads to healing. That's why oftentimes it's important when we visit with folks who are going through a tough time. Sometimes it's okay to just be in a room and just sit and just be quiet. And I know that silence is uncomfortable for us. You know, when you're teaching a class and you ask a question and there's just silence for 5 or 10 minutes, we need to learn to stop being uncomfortable with that. Sometimes silence, you know, silence is golden. Yeah, silence is golden in those moments. Sometimes just sit. It's one of the reasons why I think, you know, other cultures deal with mourning better than we do. Americans, we always want to fix stuff. You know, go mourn with some other cultures, and you'll see that mourning lasts for several days, and it's communal, and it's just part of who they are. And it takes time to heal. You can't heal over the loss of a spouse in an hour or a day or a week. Sometimes that takes years. I've been married 50 years. You want me to get over that in a day? Some might do that. But if someone doesn't, it doesn't mean that they're broken. We mourn. And sometimes, and that's why, you know, there's a practice in Jewish culture called Shiva, which is just a time where you just come and you just sit. You might have conversation. You might talk. But sometimes you just sit. And you're just present. Experiencing sadness or acknowledging sadness is important. The presence of sadness often conjures up moments of genuine compassion. You know, here's a story in Luke chapter 7, verse number 11. It says, soon afterward, Jesus went to a town called Nain, and his disciples and a large crowd went along with him. As he approached the town gate, a dead person was being carried out, the only son of his mother, and she was a widow. And a large crowd from the town was with her. When the Lord saw her, his heart went out to her, and he said, don't cry. You understand that Jesus was motivated and reacted to the deep sadness of this widow. And she was deeply sad, and she was crying, not just because her only son had died, but she was a widow. So she had already lost her husband. And it wasn't just because her son was dead and her husband was dead. Now, as a widow, she had no one to take care of her. She was about to live a life of being destitute and poor, and she had no one to take care of her. So Jesus sees a widow mourning the loss of her only son, was moved more than by just the loss of folks, but understanding that her plight was about to be a rough one, and her sadness conjured up deep compassion. You know, it's sometimes sadness that brings out our empathy and our sympathy and our compassion. So let's not be quick to just try to eradicate someone's expression of sadness. Let's meet them in that moment. Let's dig deep. Let's just draw from the heart of Jesus, and let's demonstrate compassion. Experiencing sadness helps to illuminate and heighten the experience of joy. If you want to experience true joy, we need to experience not having joy. It heightens the experience of joy. You know, Psalm 30 and 11, you've turned my wailing into dancing. You've removed my sackcloth and clothed me with joy, that my heart may sing your praises and not be silent. The psalmist here has experienced some pain and some distress, and having an understanding of that when God swoops in and he does something, it helped that psalmist to experience great joy and dancing. Psalm chapter 90, verse number 14 from the New Living Translation, satisfy us each morning with your unfailing love, so we may sing your joy to the end of our lives. Give us gladness in proportion to our former misery. Replace the evil years with good. Let us, your servants, see your work again. Let our children see your glory again. Another psalmist who has experienced pain and distress and disturbance, sadness, and is now experiencing joy, and it is a heightened experience because of the misery and the sadness that they went through. Whereas in the beginning of the film, Inside Out, we see sadness being cast into an abyss of uselessness. You know, go stand in a circle. By the end of the film, we see the interconnectivity of all the emotions, but primarily the connection of joy and sadness. I was reading that in the original drafting of the film, this film was supposed to be about joy and fear working together. But after the draft, they said, something just doesn't look right. And so they switched the characters, joy and sadness. If you notice in the film that joy and sadness both have the same color hair. There's an interconnectivity between joy and sadness that shouldn't be missed. Joy is trying to protect core memories and the personality of Riley. So I want you to take notice in this next clip where Joy finally understands that the origin of core memories isn't exclusively Joy's job. Even sadness generates these core memories. Let's watch this clip.
I can't wait to get the old Riley back. As soon as we get there, I'm gonna fix this whole mess.
Wow, is this Riley? He's so big now, so he won't fit in my rocket. How are we gonna get to the moon?
Oh, it's that time in the twisty tree, remember? The hockey team showed up and Mom and Dad were there cheering. Look at her, having fun and laughing. Oh, I love this one.
I love that one too.
Not a girl. Now you're getting it.
Yeah, it was the day the Prairie Dogs lost the big playoff game. Riley missed the winning shot. She felt awful. She wanted to quit. Sorry, I went sad again, didn't I?
I'll tell you what, we can keep working on that when we get back, okay?
Okay. The Prairie Dogs lost the big playoff game. Riley missed the winning shot. She felt awful. She wanted to quit.
Sadness. Mom and Dad, the team, they came to help because of sadness.
That's where the light went on for Joy. And she understood that sadness had a place, that the origin of that core memory wasn't a joyful moment. It was a sad moment. And there we see the intersection of joy and sadness. Where joy and sadness meet might be the mantra of the Christian faith. You see, it was at the cross where Jesus died. It's there where we actually see the intersection of all the emotions. Because there's anger. There's fear. That was a bloody and gory day. There was certainly disgust. And there was sadness. You see all those women at the foot of the cross just weeping and crying. But also because of what it was going to accomplish, there was joy. The cross is where joy and sadness meet. Our attempts to suppress feelings of sadness or any other emotion in deference of joy is simply unhealthy. Even professionals, psychologists, and experts have pointed this out. One expert wrote this, quote, "Anger and sadness are an important part of life, and new research shows that experiencing and accepting such emotions are vital to our mental health. Attempting to suppress thoughts can backfire and even diminish our sense of contentment or joy. Acknowledging the complexity of life may be an especially fruitful path to psychological well-being or emotional good health." But I would offer that in addition to good emotional health, experiencing all emotions, including sadness, helps us to see the beauty and power of the cross. You see, at the cross, joy and sadness meet. And there is a place where hope finds an entrance into our story. It was at the cross. It was at the cross where joy and sorrow met. So you have a blue piece of paper and want to give you instructions on what to do with that paper. Last week on the yellow slips of paper, I wanted you to simply write something that gives you joy. Now what I want you to consider, and we're going to play a song to give you some reflection time as you consider this question. I want you to write on the paper. I just want you to be completely honest and transparent. It makes me feel sad when. You don't have to write that beginning phrase. Just write what makes you sad. It makes me sad when, and write that down. As we play this song, I want you to have some time to consider that. And then when you're finished writing, just go ahead and place your card between these two bowls. Then I want you to take a blue bead. Last week, if you were here, you took a yellow bead for joy. This week, I want you to take a blue bead for sadness. So have some time now as we play the song.
There's a place of quiet stillness between the light and shadows reach, where the hurting and the hopeless seek everlasting peace. Words of men and songs of angels whisper come.
Praise team, want to take their place behind me. We're going to sing another song of encouragement, invitation, whatever you want to call it. Want to give some attention to any needs that you might have as members, as visitors. If there's something you want to share with us, you want us to be praying for, you want us to be present with you in this moment, we want to give you an opportunity to let us know. We desire to be present with one another, and sometimes we can't be present because we simply don't know. We need one of two things to happen. We need to ask if you need us to be present, or you need to tell us you need us to be present. So we want to offer that opportunity as we sing this song.